My good friend is Zach Osterman. He's on the phone with us this morning. Good morning. How are you?
I'm fantastic, Wes. How about you?
I'm glad you got your vacation in a couple weeks ago, because this waterfall of events and stuff going on nonstop. Obviously, we've all been busy this week, and you've been a little bit busier than most. And just when you think, hey, it's the first week in August, we're just going to get our previews out for Indiana's training camp, get you a little position-by-position guide. Next thing you know, you've got a busy media day. And yesterday, the code was cracked, and College Game Day is coming to town for the home opener, Indiana-Ohio State, Thursday night, August 31st, 8 p.m. Where do we start? Where do you want to start? You want to go back in chronological order? No, let's start with the exciting stuff. What is the significance of College Game Day coming to Bloomington to open up the college football season?
Well, obviously, it's a really big, you know, it is a level of national sort of recognition or attention that Indiana's never really had before. And fans will remember trying to bring it, the proper Saturday show to Bloomington a couple years ago for IU Ohio State. You know, this is one of the things I said yesterday to remember, is if you ever wonder why Indiana's willing to take on Ohio State on a Thursday night to open its football season, this is one reason why. I mean, number one, you're going to have to play Ohio State at some point in the season anyway. Number two, if you play in the first week of the season, they're going to be as, you know, sort of lacking in sharpness as you are, theoretically. And number three, it gives you the opportunity to maybe put yourself into this position. ESPN looks at it. I haven't looked at the whole slate of games that first Thursday night of the college football season, but ESPN looks at this one and says Indiana, often whether they win or lose, often gives a good game for TV, lots of scoring, close games, particularly at home. Ohio State, obviously one of the most appealing teams in the country right now. They made it to the playoff last season. Then they went, they lost 30-0 to Clemson in the Fiesta Bowl, so they had Kevin Wilson. Could that sort of kick their offense up another notch and make them a playoff contender again? And it's Thursday night. It's the opening night of college football season. It's a college town, should be a good atmosphere. And so if you're ESPN, it makes tons of sense. And if you're Indiana, it's that level of attention that maybe you wouldn't get if this game was being played at noon on a Saturday.
And the other part of this, which is interesting, is it's absolutely positive propaganda for the university, recruiting, and everything else that goes with that, because essentially you're in the ESPN car wash all day long leading up to it.
Right, exactly. And you're going to be, I mean, you're bringing, you know, the ESPN personalities. I think it's already been confirmed that Lee Corso will be there, which is no surprise given, obviously, his ties to IU. Reese Davis will be hosting. You'll be bringing the megaphone that is ESPN to a college football event. If it was college basketball, you know, I think fans would be really excited, but would anybody be terribly surprised? IU's hosted College Game Day, you know, numerous times before. But it's college football. I mean, you know, that's unusual. And when it comes to college football, I think ESPN, in a particular College Game Day, kind of set the weekly agenda a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, I think
for
that's
lack
fair.
Of a better term.
No, you're right.
And they're going to be setting it in Bloomington. And you know, that doesn't win you the game. And I'm sure Indiana's still going to be an underdog in this one against Ohio State and all those things. And there's a long way to go to figure out, you know, matchups. And, I mean, Lord knows, if nothing else, who comes out of the fall healthier and those sorts of things. But, you know, at the end of the day, college football is kind of going to be centered in Bloomington, Indiana for one night. And that's something very unusual and something that Indiana should be excited about.
If Ohio State and if the opponent, Ohio State, doesn't get your attention, if Thursday night football on a Labor Day weekend doesn't get your attention, and ESPN coming to do their game day version, their weekday version set up, you check all the boxes there. Tom Allen has called this the most important opening game in Indiana history. I know Tom is, just like most coaches, are subject to a little bit of hyperbole. I don't think he's wrong here.
No, I mean, probably not. I mean, you're talking about a program that can make a legitimate case to say that it is, if not on the rise, then certainly, at very least, has kind of turned its fortunes and its general momentum around. Indiana's beaten Purdue four times in a row. Indiana's been to two straight bowl games. Yes, there was the coaching change, but suddenly Indiana's playing really competitive defense, and Tom Allen talked about having a top 25 level defense this season. There's no reason to believe that, frankly, in my mind, that he can't come. He can't, if he doesn't achieve that, he can't at least come very close to it, given everything Indiana's got coming back on that side of the ball. If Indiana goes to a bowl this year, it's not going to be easy for the schedule they've got, but if they do, this will be the first time, I think, since 1988 that they've gone to three straight bowl games, so basically three decades. Back then, you know, you think back to what Indiana was at that point in time, that was, you know, Bill Mallory beating Ohio State, Bill Mallory beating Michigan, Anthony Allen, you know, rushing for touchdown after touchdown, competing for a Heisman Trophy.
Anthony Thompson, but I know what you meant. I know what you meant there. And remember, the darkest day in Ohio State football happened during that time as well. So you look.
I mean, that is
that's big
beyond the Rose Bowl. That is kind of the halcyon period in IU football history, and I can draw you a plausible scenario that says IU has the opportunity to recapture some of that, not just this season, but maybe kind of with the platform that's been built the last couple of years and then transitioning into this season. You know, it sort of feels a little bit Norman Dale-ish to say that, you know, beating Ohio State's got to be beyond everybody's wildest dreams if you're an IU football fan, so maybe leave it there for a while. But it does represent a large opportunity to say, we're going to be on ESPN. We're going to have all the big dignitaries in town. We're going to have a big-time opponent in town. I would be surprised if this game's not a sellout. Now, what the crowd split is between IU and Ohio State fans, we'll see. But I'd be surprised if the game's not a sellout. So you're going to have a great atmosphere. Again, it's just, I think that the big word is it provides a lot of opportunities.
It sure does. And back to your sellout point, I think the bursar bill and adding your tickets for basketball and football, those might be extended a couple more days now with this announcement on the side of things. So hopefully the students take advantage of all that before the Ohio State fans. You know they will take advantage of it. As we saw a couple weeks ago, hotel rooms in Bloomington that weekend are already in the close to $500 range. That tells you it's going to be a big game. ESPN solidifies that and stamps it. But back to your point from perhaps media days, Tom Allen recognizes the largeness of all that goes on around him. He put three numbers on the chalkboard, on the white erase board, the dry erase board for his team and his coaches. What were they? 50, 26, and 10? Those are representing the last time Indiana has been to won the league, won a bowl game, and had a winning record. So he understands that this is pretty heavy lifting.
Well, and I mean, Allen's an interesting figure for me to talk about because people will ask sort of what has made him successful at Indiana thus far, and obviously scheme is part of it. I mean, he's clearly a good football mind. There's no questioning that when you look at his success coaching linebackers at Ole Miss, you look at his success even at the high school level, you look at his success in that 1 year at South Florida, then 1 year at Indiana. But there is also just kind of an intangible part to it that he is unusually capable of getting college age guys
fired up
to just kind of believe in themselves, in him, in each other. In you know, the idea of a broader, larger goal that sounds simple, and maybe for certain people it is, but for a lot of other people it's not. And that's, you know, one of the greatest challenges, frankly, in college sports. And Tom Allen, it's clearly just something he's got. I mean, again, you think about the transition from Allen to Wilson seemed so smooth, and I think a lot of people figured it was because Allen had been at Indiana, but the truth is he'd been at Indiana for 11 months. I mean, it wasn't like Tom Allen recruited, you know, half the players on the roster and knew all their parents and all this different stuff. He was able to build such a quick rapport with his defense. And we talked about that all last spring and summer and even into the fall. And then as soon as kind of that transition happened, suddenly he has virtually the same relationship with every player on his team. And now we've talked about that all spring and summer and into the fall.
Yeah, but that makes sense.
How does that translate itself as a head coach? I don't know yet. this time last year, I wouldn't have been able to tell you exactly what Indiana's defense was going to be able to do, how it would be able to improve. But there really is just a little bit of that it factor that kids, guys just talk about him differently, even his assistants just talk about him a little bit differently. And sometimes that little bit can really make a big difference, as cheesy and lame and weird as it sounds.
Zach Osterman's our guest this morning. He's the beat writer for the Indianapolis Star, but you already knew that. Find him at Zach Osterman on Twitter for all of his preseason articles about IU and Media Day and camps and position previews. It's all there at the Indy Star site. We talked about Tom Allen being able to get belief out of his defense. You posed the question, well, how do I know that's going to make it work as a head coach? Well, quite simply, the offense last year, the players that are coming back, looked at what the defense has done. They bought into Tom Allen's system. Wouldn't that guarantee everybody to buy in if it's that good? Does that make sense?
Right. No. Sorry, I lost you there for a second. But, I mean, I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. And, you know,
Look what these guys did. We can all do this.
Well, and as much as people talk about, you know, well, the defense bought in, but will the offense buy in? You know, how will the offense believe as much or whatever? It's like, well, you know, defensive guys and offensive guys know each other a little bit. I mean, this is, you know, these are all teammates at the end of the day. The offensive guys are not just going to see what the defense is doing day to day in practice or week to week in games. They're also going to be talking to their friends, to their teammates who play on the other side of the ball. And again, I mean, schematically speaking, Tom Allen is a defensive guy. He'll say that up front. I mean, he calls Mike DeBoard the head coach of his offense. Mike DeBoard's Indiana's offense coordinator. He, not unlike Kevin Wilson with IU's defense many, many times, he is letting Mike DeBoard and his staff more or less unilaterally control that offense. But when we're talking in sort of these sort of bigger picture, what Fred Glass might call sort of deeper thought, you know, concepts with IU football, again, like, it's not like the offensive meeting room and the defensive meeting room never connect. It's not like there's just some divide between offensive players and defensive players, and Tom Allen suddenly had to introduce himself and sell himself to Indiana's offensive players the day he was hired as head coach. They all knew who he was. They all had relationships with him and his players and probably even some of his assistants. It wasn't hard for him to just sort of smooth that message out across the whole roster, where obviously for, you know, the first 10, 11 months, he had really focused in on IU's defense.
Zach Osterman joins us from the Indy Star this morning. Talking Hoosier football, game days in town, opening night, August 31st, 8 p.m. on ESPN against the number 2 ranked in the coaches poll, Ohio State Buckeyes. Tom Allen's first gig as head coach. Moving forward, did Kevin Wilson learn anything about taking on too much responsibility in his first head coaching job by having to do everything with the offense? Do you see Tom Allen going down that path as well? Because trying to manage one side of the ball and be the CEO of the program, it doesn't sound like it's easy, and there's not a whole lot of teams that do this, is there?
You know, there's probably more than you think. I mean,
because there's not a defensive coordinator like you mentioned. There's an assistant in Mark Hagan, but Tom Allen is it.
Yeah, I mean, there's places where, I mean, up until last season, Gus Malzahn was intimately involved with women, was essentially calling plays for Auburn's offense. Hugh Freeze was heavily involved, and obviously I'm not having any discussion about what's going on with Hugh Freeze.
No.
You know, away from the game. But he was heavily involved in Ole Miss's offense. I believe Tom Herman is very, you know, kind of fingerprints all over his offense. Is at Houston now, presumably at Texas. Paul Johnson doesn't even have a playbook. He just pulls up at Georgia Tech. He's the one that runs that funky option.
Formerly at Navy.
He'll literally just call over a player, tell him what play he wants him to run, and send him into the –
playbook. This isn't a big deal then?
No, I mean, there are other coaches that don't do it that way. And you'll see sometimes where you think, for example, about Gus Malzahn. Malzahn, last season at a certain point, did turn play calling over to his offensive coordinator, basically said he felt like – he was neglecting too many of his duties as head coach, if I'm remembering what he said about this. And then wound up hiring a different offensive coordinator that he's pretty much turned unilateral control over to this offseason. But you also see, I mean, and this is me obviously speaking from my down-home personal experience, you think about the Atlanta Falcons' run to the Super Bowl last season, they'll more or less admit to you that it started or it really kicked into high gear in early mid-December when Dan Quinn, who was their head coach and was the Seahawks' defensive coordinator during some of their best years, their Super Bowl years, when Dan Quinn took defensive play calling over from his defensive coordinator. So from basically the last like six games of the regular season and then through the playoffs all the way through the Super Bowl, Dan Quinn, the head coach, was also calling defensive play. So it's something that happens. It's something that can work. It's something that maybe not everybody does and not everybody's comfortable with. I think it's something that probably Tom Allen, let's get through a year or maybe even two and then just kind of say, coach, you know, how do you feel about this? Maybe he doesn't have any problem with it. Maybe he feels like it's easy. It's not that bad. I'd also point out that it's very likely, I would say, that we're about to see college football allow programs to hire a 10th full-time assistant. So you could, in theory, add another body on defense or maybe add another body, let's say, in special teams that takes some responsibilities away from some defensive coaches. And then all of a sudden, maybe that job gets a little bit easier because of that as well. Because even if Tom Allen is the head coach of the defense, so to speak, to use his words talking about it, like the board, he's at least maybe got a little bit more administrative support behind him. So it can work. It's just kind of down to the individual coach, their preference, the way they want to approach things. And we'll see if Tom Allen comes out of this season feeling any different.
Zach Osterman's our guest this morning. You can find him at the Indianapolis Star, IndyStar.com, at Zach Osterman on Twitter. Obviously, part of your preseason drill is writing position previews for every spot for the Indiana Hoosiers roster. Camp opens this week. Helmets and shells until what, Sunday? Then they're going to hit, get everybody ready to go. Good news, bad news, not much in the injury department to talk about. But you lose a pass rusher to start the season already. Niles Sykes was hurt. I'll let you tell me about him. Anything to worry about with Brandon Knight? I know Wop Filler, he's a freshman. True freshmen don't always make huge differences. But that seems to be a pretty good injury report in the scheme of 120 players or so.
Yeah, I mean, it's okay. I think it's probably one you'd prefer to have coming out of fall camp and going into fall camp. Just because, you know, you are about to start hitting again and contact can bring a whole different set of sort of injury challenges and things. The Sykes one hurts. I mean, Brandon Knight, you know, we don't know the exact nature of the injury. Tom Allen didn't divulge that. I mean, he was a guy that was limited through part of last fall camp. I think it was with a foot problem. That allowed Coy Kronk to win the left tackle job. Then Knight came back right about the time Dimitri Kamil got hurt and was lost for the season. So Knight took the right tackle job until he got hurt late in the season.
Stop getting
and missed
hurt
the rest of the season. So I guess if there's maybe one concern with Brandon Knight, it's durability questions. But I'm also not, you know, looking at his medical charts or working on his injuries and things like that. So I'm not going to sit here and say I think he's got some kind of injury problem. Sykes does sting. I mean, he had five sacks last season. Four of them over the back half of the season when Indiana, as a team, finished the last seven games with 71 tackles for loss and 24 sacks, including five in the bowl game. He was a Notre Dame recruit initially. He was widely thought of coming out of high school as one of the most promising defensive end/linebackers in the Midwest in his class. And I think he was a guy that, at least in my eyes, and I don't want to put words in Tom Allen's mouth or Mark Hagan's mouth. Mark Hagan is, in addition to being that assistant defense coordinator you mentioned, is Sykes' position coach along the defensive line. I don't want to put words in their mouth. In my eyes, he started to look like maybe that legitimate pass rush threat Indiana hadn't had since Nick Mangieri and Zach Shaw graduated. It was very much by committee last season. And if you're Indiana, you still actually have six defensive linemen, not counting Niles Sykes returning from last year, who had at least one sack last season. So that whole sort of by, I mean, Hagan used that term, by committee, pass rush by committee.
Yeah, it keeps guys fresh.
You can potentially do that again. But you're always better if you've got on defense, if you've got that one guy that you put in there, and he, you know, at least two, three, four times a week. I'm not saying getting three, four sacks a week, but he's getting three, four QB pressures, hurries a week. That changes the way that offenses have to game plan for you. That changes the way that offensive lines are going to react when they see him line up. That changes what they're going to think when he switches from the left side to the right side, back to the left side, so on and so forth. And I'm not saying Sykes would have had, you know, 15, 17 sacks or anything like that this season, but it really did feel like he was growing into the kind of player that could give Indiana a legitimate pass rush threat, that as a redshirt junior after the year he had last season, he could potentially have something of a breakout year, maybe get into double-digit sacks, and just add another dimension to a defense that, as I said, is really setting the bar high for itself in 2017. Now, all of a sudden, you lose that. And you lose it. It sounds like the injury happened late in the summer. So you lose it probably just when you're starting to firm up plans for fall camp and who you're going to be looking at most and how you hope your rotations and things are going to shake out. And that stuff always changes a little bit based in part on injuries and in part on, you know, who steps up, what guys really kind of impress and perform. But I would imagine Nile Sykes was at the forefront of a number of off-season conversations about how the defensive line could get even better this year. Now he's out until 2018. That's just
tough,
you know,
break.
It is.
It seems like every camp year, that was something, whether it's Jayshon Harris, we can go back through all the names. It's someone that you think, hey, they're ready to go, ready to break out, and boom. It's tough. Football is a tough game, and we understand all that. Zach Osterman's our guest this morning. Before we let you go quickly, we heard rumors and rumblings out of Terre Haute earlier in the week for Indiana basketball that Indiana State will be the opponent on November 10th. Any confirmations, clarifications on that?
The best I can add, and this is just sort of, I wouldn't call this like the hard and fast party line, but I think it's more or less on point, is I would expect that to happen. I don't know that it's finalized.
I think
that's kind of the, you know, I think it's possible that maybe I think there may have been like a report out of Terre Haute or somewhere that
a newscaster tweeted it out, right?
I don't know if it is done, but like in terms of are all the contracts signed and sealed and notarized, whatever else has to happen, I don't think so. But I would also be pretty surprised at this point if Indiana State isn't the opener. I think people should generally plan for that. And that's on November 10th, which is the first, that means Indiana, I'm not looking at a calendar, but
it's a Friday.
That is the first day of college of the college basketball season.
Okay.
It's always that second Friday in November. So Indiana opens on the first day that it can in terms of regular season. With Indiana State. I was about to call them Terre Haute State.
You're allowed to. That's fine.
With Indiana State. I feel like that's like Pro Evo Soccer where they couldn't use the team name, so it would just be like the Merseyside Reds.
There you go.
The Manchester Red Devils. Yeah, so Terre Haute State. No, but Indiana State, I would expect it to happen, and I think I generally, if it's not done, it's probably fairly close at this point. So that's how Indiana will start the basketball season.
Is Neymar worth 200 million pounds?
You know what? If somebody's willing to pay for him, that's what he's worth. I heard he's coming to the IU Ohio State game.
He's that's going to be the guest picker on the College Game Day set. And then he's going to buy College Game Day when he leaves.
I was going to say, then he's going to pay Indiana to rename Memorial Stadium Neymar Field.
That's it. Neymar is the Brazilian attacking midfield player that used to play for Barcelona, was sold for 200 million pounds. Somebody put it in perspective on Twitter. Only Kevin Durant, Kobe Bryant, and one other NBA player have made over $200 million in their careers. His rights were sold for $200 million. That's the highest-priced footballer ever. There are always exceptions to rules, and 200. That's a lot of money. Because I'm not good from the. You can help me with this because you've been across the pond, as the kids say. The 200 million pounds is how many U.S. dollars? Are we at your quarter of a billion yet?
I think it would be a little bit just shy of that. Ever since, and I'm not trying to get political, but ever since Brexit happened, the pound has smoked hard. And I think it's about like 1 to 1.2 or 1.15.
Well, then we should
like
get
that
across the pond then, while our dollar has value.
Hey, I was there in May. It was great. I mean, it, you know, I bought 50 pounds worth of Liverpool gear, and it, I don't think it even cost me $60.
Zach is a big Liverpool football fan. I'm a big Manchester United fan. This would be like Indiana and Purdue fans talking about soccer or football, rather. So we'll leave it.
I don't
think
it would be like them talking about soccer. Purdue doesn't even have a
men's team. That's right. It would be like them talking about football, but Indiana has four old oaken buckets. I won't make an analogy about the Liverpool matchup. We won't talk about that this time. We will save that for another day. Hey, I really appreciate your time today. We had plenty to cover. We got it all covered. Don't forget, football fans, the BTN is in town this morning. Turn on Big Ten Network. They're doing live stuff. They're at IU's camp all day, so they'll kick off their little tailgate preseason tour. So if you want IU football, we got plenty of it for you. Zach, thanks again. We'll obviously talk before college game day, if not on maybe the morning of game day. That's too far to worry about. Let's hope no news is good news as Indiana moves through camp, and we'll do it again shortly.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right, thank you so much, my friend. At Zach Osterman on Twitter.